KFJB 90.1 The Eagle, good day. Welcome to Environmental Voices. I'm Marie Rock. Joining me once again in the studio is Steve Mortensen. What are we going to talk about today, Steve?
Well, we're going to talk about, in particular, the long-eared bat, which is one of the bat species we have up here.
Oh, how many types of bats do we have up here?
There's about six species of bats in Minnesota, and I'm not sure if all of them make it this far north or not, but there's about six species here.
Wow, okay. So what's special about our long-eared bats?
Right, the long-eared bat is one that's declining a lot and one that's being proposed for listing under the Endangered Species Act. And tentatively, they're supposed to come out with a finding on that this fall sometime. It remains to be seen what will happen with that. But, you know, if it does get listed, that could have some effects on forest-type activities around here. This is a bat that you typically, you know, wouldn't get in your house. I wouldn't say it would never show up in your house, but typically it's not going to show up there. It's one of the bats that's going to use tree cavities and stuff, and that's where they would typically be found. So in addition to, you know, issues of white-nosed bats and making sure they have adequate habitat in the way of coarse rooted debris, snags, shaggy bark trees, that type of thing is going to be important to protecting that species. So as part of listing, they would actually come up with, you know, what is critical habitat for this species, and they haven't done that yet, and that'd be kind of an important part to determine what will happen with that in terms of the listing.
All right. How many long-eared bats, how many do we have here?
We really don't know. There's not much known about it. They're starting up some surveys here. Uh-huh. They started some on Superior National Forest last year. I think they caught two females.
Wow.
They're rather difficult to catch, and they put radio transmitters on them. But being they're a pretty small critter, you know, the radio transmitter can't be very big. It's very small. And it's only good for like a week at most, and the bats tend to groom them off. They will glue them on their back, but the bats will tend to groom them off within just a few days. So when they put these on, then they have to follow them 24 hours a day and try and determine where they're going, what they're using, that type of thing.
Wow.
So it's pretty intensive work, and they're, like I said, they're hard to catch. They catch them in mist nets, which is a really, really fine mesh net that you might use for like catching birds for banding.
Mm-hmm.
But being that, you know, they don't concentrate in houses or caves or anything like that, it's really hard to get, you know, a net in front of a particular bat and end up with the right species.
Awesome.
So they're really hard to study. One of the more difficult species here. Well, long-eared bat is one of the bats that's really in decline. Part of the reason is the preponderance of white-nosed bat syndrome. And white-nosed bat syndrome is a fungal disease that bats get. And it causes kind of a fuzzy fungal type growth on their nose and wings and other parts of the body. And what it appears to do is that it just really irritates them. It'd be like having a rash or something for a human. And when they're trying to hibernate and they get this condition, they tend not to be able to sleep or hibernate or whatever. And sometimes they will deplete their fat reserves that they need to live on over the winter. And they'll actually go out and try and fly around in the wintertime. And, of course, there's not much to eat out in the wintertime in this part of the world, so they end up starving to death or freezing. They're just not adapted for our cold winter temperatures.
Well, they hibernate?
Yes, some of our bats will migrate south, and there's a few that actually will hibernate up here, but not in this immediate area because they need caves to hibernate in.
Okay.
Caves, of course, have a much moderated temperature from the outside air. Once you get back into a cave, maybe a few hundred yards or so, the temperature will be pretty much steady there year-round. And like up here, if we had any caves, it would be about 48 degrees, which is the temperature of our water coming out of the ground.
Oh, okay.
So when it the further south you get, it gets a little bit warmer. But
so in this area, where would a bat live?
Well, they live in a variety of habitats. Naturally, most of them would live in trees, be it hollow trees or cavities in a tree or under loose bark or something like that. But, of course, they do show up in people's houses and attics and things like that. That's kind of a substitute for them. I guess it kind of looks like a hollow tree or something, a big hollow tree maybe.
Bats in the attic?
Bats in your belfry, yes.
What do you do if that happens?
Well, the best thing to do is you got to find out where the bats are getting in. And that can be really, sounds easy, but it can be really hard because bats can get into a tiny, tiny hole about the size of your thumb or less. If they can find a hole that big, they can get in.
Wow.
So the best thing to do is, you know, find out where they're getting in. And if you're intent on trying to get rid of them, you know, during the summer or whatever, the best thing to do is put kind of a one-way door on that opening, a little metal flapper or a piece of plastic or something so they can get out of your house, but they can't get back in there. The downside of that is if they have young in your attic, course, those young are going to end up starving or whatever, dying. So probably the best thing to do is wait till fall and then put up the one-way thing and get them out of there in the fall when they're going to leave anyhow to move further south. And then you can seal off the opening. And it can be a real challenge, especially in older buildings, to keep the bats out, because any little hole, they'll find a way in if they can.
Now, they're mammals. Don't they have, like, when they're young or born, their live birth?
Yes.
Okay. When do they have their babies?
That would be sometime in the spring, early summer. Things warm up.
Okay. All right. We once had a bat get into our furnace. I don't know how he got in there, but he got into the furnace in our trailer, and it was kind of scary trying to get him out of there. I know that they do carry diseases. Are these diseases that can affect humans?
Yes, there's a couple diseases. Of course, rabies is the one everybody hears about. And bats can, there's two species of mammals that can actually kind of get rabies, like a person would get a common cold, and that's bats and skunks.
Okay.
Pretty much all other things have to be bitten by something that's infected to actually get it. But bats can carry rabies, so you got to be cautious of that. For the most part, they're going to leave you alone. But if you see a bat, you know, acting strange or active during the day or something when they shouldn't be, you know, you want to be cautious of them. You probably should never, you know, go run around picking up a bat by hand. That's just not a good idea. The other thing that bats, the bats themselves, I guess you wouldn't say they would carry this, but there's some fungal diseases that can live in their droppings. And some of the like blastomycosis type diseases that can be fatal in humans. Of course, this is a fungus that's widespread in the environment, and you probably breathe it in every other breath. You breathe in a few spores, but you can handle a low level of infection like that. But if you get into people that tend to get this, are people like working with rotten wood or working up in an attic or where there's a lot of bat droppings,
mm-hmm.
and you'd get exposed to a huge number of spores at one time and get them in your lungs, and then this fungus would start to really rapidly grow in your lungs and your body wouldn't be able to fend it off.
Wow.
And that can be a fatal disease. And I know a few people that have died from this.
Wow. So what does your typical bat eat?
Well, bats, in this part of the country, they're primarily all insect eaters. Now, you go to other parts of the world, there's bats that eat fruit. There's even bats that eat frogs and fish and things like that. They can grab frogs and fish off the surface of the water, which is really strange. But up in this part of the world, they eat mainly insects. And people think they eat mosquitoes, and certainly they will eat some mosquitoes, but they're probably much better off at catching some of the night-flying beetles and things. And some of these are real pests in our forests. So that's a real issue that we do need to have bats around. They do provide a very worthwhile service.
Okay, so they just fly at night. They don't fly during the day?
Typically not.
Okay, why not?
Because they're adapted to hunt at night. They have a sonar system, but they broadcast a really high frequency sound that goes out, and if it encounters a bug or something flying around, it will bounce back to the bat, and then they, just like a sonar in a ship, they can tell where this organism is, and they can fly up and grab it.
So that kind
in
of
total darkness.
That kind of brings the saying blind as a bat.
Right.
Okay. I had to ask. Steve, what if we didn't have any bats? Is that going to really be a problem?
Well, I think it would be a serious problem, especially worldwide, because you know, the bats that eat fruit do a lot of pollinating of those species. And up here, as I mentioned, the bats eat a lot of insects that would otherwise be affecting our forests and other plants. So they, by eating all those insects, and it's a huge number, they provide a very worthwhile service.
Wow, okay. You mentioned the white nose syndrome that was going on. Didn't you take a trip to a cave somewhere recently?
Yeah, I was on vacation down to Mammoth Cave a month or so ago, and we went down and toured the cave and so on. And it's pretty interesting because they have, this is a huge cave. I forget how many hundreds of miles, or maybe it's thousands, I forget. But it's really a huge cave, and there's bats in the cave, at least in the outer reaches of it. They don't go all the way back in. And a really long history of bats there. In fact, this is one of the places where they used to mine the bat guano and use it to make gunpowder. Bat droppings have a high concentration of nitrogen, which is one of the components you need to make gunpowder.
Really?
So, yeah, worldwide, bat guano has been harvested for gunpowder and also fertilizer forever. But another thing I noticed, that I'd been to that cave in the past, and now when you come out of the cave, you have to get your shoes and feet disinfected. You have to walk through these, they're kind of foam mats that have this liquid in, and what they use is woolite, like you use to wash your wool clothing.
Wow.
And apparently that's an effective disinfectant against white-nosed bat syndrome.
And that just keeps it from spreading?
Right.
Wow. That is kind of cool.
Because one of the the things they're really concerned about is there's people that like to go down in caves. Some people really don't like going in caves, but there's some people that really thrive on that, and they like to crawl back in these tiny spaces and so on. And of course, these people that do that are covered with dust and stuff. And if they go to one cave and do that, and then they go to another cave somewhere else, they could easily spread that disease. So now those folks have to disinfect all their clothes and so on. And some caves are actually stopping people from doing that. Spelunking, it's called. They don't let you do it anymore because of the danger of spreading white-nosed bat syndrome. Disease started in the eastern part of the U.S. and is now spread. They have found the spores and stuff in Minnesota. I don't think they found any bats that actually have the condition yet, but they found the spores for it in Minnesota already, so it's here.
Is there any kind of cure for it?
There's no cure known at this time, and it apparently kills a very high percentage of the bats. I think they're saying something like 6 million bats have been killed already in the U.S.
Wow.
And numbers just going to increase. They don't know what's going to happen. It may be that some bats will be resistant to it and will survive the condition. That remains to be seen. But, loss of our bats could be a real serious threat to us.
All right. Well, gave me a whole new perspective on bats there, Steve. Thanks so much for coming in. That's going to wrap up another edition of Environmental Voices for KOJB 90.1 The Eagle. I'm Marie Rock.